Hey, I'm Heather, and I'm an alcoholic. And I can say, I don't think this will be boring. I've gotten to know Laura over the last year and become friends with her. And of course, the thing I like the most about her is she is completely raw and honest. And those are my people. I like no bullshit. I am no bullshit. You know what I'm saying? There's no speed bump. There is definitely not. And I like that in a person. So with that, I'll give you Laura.
Hi, everyone. Oh, no need. My name is Laura, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very nervous. And I didn't eat dinner because I was so nervous, and I like to eat, so you know I'm really nervous. And but I've spoken before, but it's been a long time. But here I am. And this morning I went to the breakfast meeting. They had a speaker here this morning, and the speaker had notes, and I was like, wow, yeah. So I sat there and I thought, well, I'll go home and write notes. And then I thought, no, I'm not. I'm not going to do that. I'm not that organized, and I don't want to go home and write notes. And then I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll ask him for his notes, and I'll read off of his notes, and maybe put a little bit of his story in my story, but you want to know that because, you know, it's his notes. So I asked him for his notes. I got his notes, and when I got them, he wrote one word on his notes. And I was like, okay, now what am I going to do? Now I have to be honest, and I have to be raw, and I got to tell you guys how it really is. So. But I brought them because he was really good, and I thought maybe they'd keep me on track because I knew I'd be nervous. But I'm from New Jersey, and I put a couple little disclaimers in my story at the beginner. I like to curse. I don't mean to offend anybody, but I just do. So please excuse my mouth if I drop the F-bomb a couple times. And I like to say, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that we want to respect the rooms we're in, but drugs are a big part of my story. I'm going to try not to get into that, but I say that because when I started drinking, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers started really coming out in force, and so we weren't able to get alcohol like we were a couple of years before. They like started closing down the bars, and people were afraid to go, you know, get us alcohol. So drugs became a very big thing for me, and they were always available. They were more available to me than alcohol, but I'll get into that. So I grew up in a very abusive home. My grandfather was a violent alcoholic. My grandmother was an alcoholic. My grandfather beat her every day. He beat my mother every day. My father's way to deal with that was he chose to leave the house. He was around, but he became a workaholic. My mother became a gambler. She didn't drink, but she had all the isms, and she was a gambler. And my uncle was a pedophile. And I say all this to you because I did a lot of work around this stuff. You know, this is my first time here. I've had 16 years before, and I relapsed. But I just like to kind of come clean with who I am in case anybody is out there or whatever might need some help or some guidance. I'm here. I've been through it. And it's helped me. And it's helped me on my path of recovery and my path of who I am today as a woman and my character today. And I take it very seriously about, you know, enjoying life, and I want to get the most out of life. So with that being said, home was very bad, and at 11 years old, I tried to commit suicide. That's how bad it was. And at that time, it was different than it is today. No one asked me what was going on at home. Nobody asked me what happened. I was deadly afraid of my mother because she was very evil. And well, she was who she was at the time. And I never said anything, but nobody ever said anything to me. And I was a kid that went to school with bruises, black eyes, and nobody said anything to me. And I know today it's a little different, and I see it different, but you know, when I hear these kids today going having a hard time, I understand. And I know today that there's no 11-year-old girl or boy that has done anything in their life to deserve to have to try to commit suicide. So I say that because it's who I am, and it's what happened. But But I tell you what else happened. When I found alcohol, the first time I used the substance, I did not like it. I got sick. My head hurt. My stomach hurt. I didn't like it at all. But I never thought, don't do that again. And that thought never came in my whole time I used. I never thought, don't do that again, Laura. I thought, just go to another drug dealer, Laura, because he's got bad stuff. That's what I used to think. It never occurred to me that this was bad stuff. And it wouldn't at the time, because when I finally used it, I got the effect that I wanted, that I never had before. It saved me. I fit in. I felt okay. I was laughing, first time in my life, I was laughing. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. Drugs and alcohol gave to me something I never had before. And I wanted to do it every day from that point that I got that effect on. I don't know where the cucumber and the pickle comes in. I think I was always a pickle, or I was being there to be a pickle, because when I got that, that was it. And so I did, and where I grew up in a town in Jersey, down the shore, it's the beach, and the town I grew up in was a square mile, and there was 21 bars in the square mile, and so it was always, there was always somebody to get it, and there was always, you could always go in and buy it or whatever, and my grandmother had a tab at one of the liquor stores, and I used to go down as a little kid, and he'd say, okay, what does grandmother want, and he'd give me whatever, and so as I grew up, I continued to do that, you know, until they shut them down, and like I said, Mother's Against Drunk Driving, it was the early 80s, and they became really big. I don't know if you guys remember any of that, but up north, they became really big, and a lot of places started closing down, so other substances started coming in, and I remember it was that big Nancy Reagan, just say no, and everybody was going, no, we say yes, and so it was, right off the bat, I don't want to say that I got in with the wrong crowd. I got in with the crowd that was like I was. I had the same kind of stuff going on that I did. They were kids that had stuff going on in the house, and we all found our out. And that was it. And one girl I became really good friends with, she went through a lot of the same experiences. And from the time, I was 13 up until about 18, we kind of supported each other and supported the addiction. And we had a bond like that. And so again, she wasn't bad. None of the kids, and even the other kids, nobody was bad. It was just, we had bad things happening in our lives. But that's that. So when I started getting the effect that I wanted, that I had never had before, when I started feeling good about life and knew that I would never try to commit suicide again because I found the reason to live, I started getting courage, and I started fighting back at my mother and stuff. And finally, I was taken out of my home when I was 13 years old, and I was put into a foster home. It wasn't really a foster home because I was too old to get adopted out, but I was put into a safer place. And that was a big shock to me, because these people sat down for dinner every night, and she kissed her kids goodnight, and wow, look at that. I wasn't into all that. I was into drinking and doing what I wanted to do, and so, but I stay there in the system, in the DIFA system up in Jersey. So I was 18, and then they told me I had to go, and where do I go? I go back home, because back home was hell, and so I had nowhere to go, and I got caught up. I was with people who were like me, and so my story from the time I was 18 until the time I was 26 I stayed out. I was a street person. I lived that lifestyle. I've been to prison 4 times. I've been to jail so many times I can't even tell you. I know that a couple years ago I applied for a job at Walmart to get like a part-time job, and they denied me because they came back with my arrest warrant, and it was just like, it was crazy amount of papers, and I was like, oh my God, where was I? But this is, but that was my life. And And in that time, I used every single day, and alcohol, and I know I certainly belong here. I know I belong here. And I know I'm an alcoholic, because when I became of age and I could drink, I always had a bottle in my hand. Didn't matter what it was, I always had a bottle in my hand. And especially after those times that I passed out, if I had no money, I always went and got a tall boy. I always had a bottle in my hand. So, there's times I think I thought that other substances were more important, but no, I'm an alcoholic. It was always there. And and my using was not one to go say, okay, I had enough, I'm going to go sleep it off. I used for days and days. I'd stay up for days, because that's the effect that I wanted. I wanted to be completely numb, completely out of it, and I wanted to be where I would get passed out and completely numb, and that's the place I always wanted to go. I did not want to go home at the end of the night. Why would you want to go home at the end of the night? That makes no sense to me. There's still stuff out there to do. So that's how I used, and I paid consequences for that. I did, and over that time, I of course attracted, I had boyfriends or I don't know, boyfriends or whatever, but men in my life who would beat me like my grandfather used to beat my grandmother, and and I had people like that in my life. That's all I knew. I knew nothing else. I knew no normalcy. You know, I thought everybody did it. Everybody got beat up. Everybody's grandparents are crazies. Everybody's uncles were pedophiles. I mean, this is the way it was in the world, and I knew no different. I didn't know any different until I came into AA. And then I started learning different, and I started learning a different way. I had a crazy, my life was crazy. And it's by the grace of God that I'm here. I know a lot of women are not here. Women that I knew who were living the same lifestyle I was, they are not here today. And there's people that I know who've done the same thing that I did, but they're sitting in prison for the rest of their life. My higher power's got a plan for me. I believe that today. I know that today. Because I'm no different than anybody who's sitting in prison. When I look at the things that I've done and the things that I've been around, I am no different. We're no different. And I was not no little angel, no little victim through there. You know, there was, I always seemed to have the meanest son of a bitch by me, but when he'd go to sleep, I broke quite a few lamps over some of their heads, you know, and I'd rob them, and I'd do my little thing, and, you know, get my little payback, but that's, you know, the here or there. That was just the craziness of it. And I'd go to jail, and I'd go to sleep, and I'd eat, and I'd get up, and I'd go right back out the door and go do what I was doing. I had no desire to get sober. I had no desire to stop. Why? It was working for me. I was getting what I wanted. I wanted to be numb. I wanted to be out of this world, and that's what it did for me. So, this went on, I was over on the East Coast, and I went up getting bail, because I was. I was supposed to go back to jail, and I didn't want to go, so I skipped bail and went to the West Coast, and I was out there for a while, and I got up with some, I got up with some pretty sick people out there, and at the beginning of, I'm going to say this was kind of like the beginning of my eyes opening, is that I was with somebody, and he cut somebody's throat for the drugs, and I had never seen that before, and you know, I've heard that, I knew it was bad out there, but I never saw it. And he had come back to my room, and I remember this is the first time I was really, really, really scared of somebody. And you know, like that high went away. I got reality. I sobered up like that. And I was like, oh my God, I gotta get away from this guy. And by my higher power, I was able to get out of there. Or I got him out of the room. I don't know how it happened, but I got away from him because I knew he was dangerous. And I started to see what this stuff really does. What it really does, but I was not done. I wasn't done. You know, I still wanted to. I was still getting the effect that I wanted. I wanted to be numb. I wanted to be out of it. And the consequences, even with that happening, and I remember that, you know, like it was yesterday. It was not enough for me to stop doing what I was doing. It wasn't enough. So, but anyway, I got caught. The bail bondsman caught me. You know, he picked me up there and he flew me back, and he thought he was going to keep the handcuffs on me the whole time, you know, and whatever. And, you know, I had such a smart mouth and attitude. I still have an attitude, but, you know, that's after so many years of using, I guess you do. But I came back. I came back to the East Coast, and I went and I did my time, and I got out, and again, I got out, and I went right back out doing what I was doing. And even, you know, in there, you know, they had their little programs in prison and stuff, and but I wanted none of that. I wanted absolutely none of it. And, you know, and the people would come in, the religious people, they'd come in with their Bibles and stuff, and screw you. I don't want nothing to do with you. And I wasn't done. I wasn't done. And even though all this, and again, all this stuff was happening, I was not done. And but what happened is I got pregnant. And I was like, oh, shit. Because, you know, even though, you know, I ran out there, I was still a person. And when I would sober up, you know, I'm a good person. I really am. And I know that today. But I see the kids, you know what I mean? Like, I've been around enough, and I see the kids, and I see the things that are going. And I certainly didn't want this for me. I didn't want this for my child. So I was like, what am I going to do? And I could never get my act together to get sober. And I could identify with women who, and people, women who are pregnant and used throughout their pregnancies and all that, because I was one of those women. I would have done that. The only thing that happened was that I had to go to court. And I went to court, and I had this young lawyer, and he's like, I'm going to get you probation. And I looked at the judge and said, oh, no, you're not. I've been through this before. I'm going to jail. I'm going to prison. He sentenced me to 9 months in prison. I was in prison for 9 months. And so in that 9 months, I ate. I had my prenatal care. I had the doctor care. I had everything I needed to have a healthy pregnancy. That's what saved me. That's the only reason why I had a healthy son, because I wasn't going to stop. I'm not stopping for nobody, no matter what I see. I was not stopping. So I went through this pregnancy, and at this time, I want to say something about my mother. My mother went and got some help. My mother, I guess, you know, whatever happened in her life, she started getting some help for her stuff, and so I came back to Jersey, and I had my son, and I had him. I got out like 2 weeks before I gave birth. So I didn't even have time to, like, go use, because it was like I got out and I was right on a plane at Cape Fear, and I gave birth, and I stayed sober for 2 months. How? I don't know. I absolutely don't know, because as soon as I was able to get out of the house, I was gone again. I don't know how I stayed there for 2 months, but I did. I stayed sober, and I was off to the races. I was off again. I forgot about him. I forgot about all that, because I wanted to do what Laura wanted to do, and I wanted to go get that, chase that numbness that I've been chasing all those years. And so I did. And in that time, my, you know, DIFAS, because I had a kid, my mother called DIFAS, and DIFAS is the youth in services up in New Jersey. And they said to me that, I needed to go get sober, and if I wanted to keep my kid. And I said, yeah, you know, because, you know, even though I'm completely self-centered and completely all about Laura and everything, I love my son. I did. I'm human. I'm a mother. I loved him. And so I said, okay, all right, let's go to this program. So I go off to this program, and I stayed sober in this program for like a year, and then, but I didn't want it. You know, I didn't want it. I had a reservation. My reservation was about smoking pot. Pot didn't take me where I went to. It was all the other substances is what I thought. I had the reservation about beer. I was a Jack Daniels girl. I loved Jack Daniels. Hated beer. All I ever had with beer did for me was make me go to the bathroom. So I wanted Jack Daniels all the time. So, but I had that reservation. I had that little thing. It wasn't that bad. So I decided one night to go have a beer and smoke a joint. And then the next day I did the same thing. And then the next day, next thing I knew, I was off doing what I've always did. I was off to the races, going for that numbness, forget about my kid, forget about all that kind of stuff, and I was gone. And I ran for the next 2 years. And in that time, DIFAS took my parental rights away from me, rightfully so, because I had no business being around a child. I had no business with the lifestyle I was living, trying to raise a child or trying to pretend that I was being a mother, because, you know, who are we kidding? When I'm drinking, I'm all about drinking. I'm not about taking care of nobody. So what happened for me is that I was with somebody, and one of my never yets is that I'm afraid of needles. I've yet to put a needle in my arm because I'm scared of it. I'm just scared. But I was with this girl who was an IV drug user, and she had gotten high, and she OD'd. And we were in a house, and everybody ran out of the house and left her there blue, including me. I left too, because nobody wanted to get a body. So anyway, what happened? Somebody called the police. They came and they got her, and they took her to the hospital. And a couple hours later, she came back. She was okay. You know, they did whatever they had to do for her. She came back, and she said to me, "Come on, I gotta go get high because she was gonna get sick." And I thought, "You're crazy. You are crazy." And my next thought is, "Well, you're just as crazy because you're going with her." And that's when I started to sober up. All of a sudden, reality just started kind of coming back, and I couldn't, no matter what I drank, no matter what I did, I couldn't get that numb feeling that I had before. It was reality. All of a sudden, I saw all the kids. I saw the toys. I saw what it was, and my life was shit. It was absolutely shit. I had nowhere to go. I had no family. I had absolutely nothing. And what I did is that down in the area I was where I had went to that rehab with my son to try to get sober. I went back to them. I said, "I'm done. I'm ready now. I'm ready." And so it was. They took me to a detox, and I went to this detox, and they locked you in there for 3 days. And I'd been there before. You know, I've kind of, you know, like I said, I've always kind of gone in and out, got sobered up, but it was different. And after that, they told me that I could either go back out on the street and try to go to AA, which I knew nothing about AA or anything. And, well, I knew about it, but I knew enough to kind of come around and like I was there and at rehab for a year, you know, enough to stay, enough to abide by the rules so that I could keep my kid and do all that. But I never did any kind of work or anything. So I said, "No, I'm going to go to halfway house." And it did, and I had absolutely nothing. And I remember that the place I went to, it was nuns, and they went and they bought me some underwear and some socks so that I had some clean underwear to go to this place to. And I went. And I went there, and I stayed there 6 months. And you know, we started going to AA, and I started listening. And I had known enough, because I had been in and out of prison enough to know that if you follow the rules, you stay below the radar. Nobody bother you. Follow the rules. So when I saw the steps, and when I saw I had to get a sponsor, and when I saw I had to do this stuff, I followed the rules. All right, I'll get your sponsor, I'll get some phone numbers, I'll call them, I'll get a job. What? Okay, I'm going to do it. Leave me alone. And so it was. And my first sponsor, and I'll tell you how I picked her. I had went to a meeting, and somebody said, "Well, you pick somebody who's got what you want." What does that mean? Okay. So this girl came up, this woman came up, and she had jewelry, and she drove a nice car, and she was giving somebody a gift. So I picked her because I wanted her to give me gifts. She had what I wanted. I wanted gifts. And so I picked her because, I mean, you know, what do I know? What do you know about sobriety coming in, you know? So, but I'll tell you I kind of look at it in my higher power being humorous, is she turned out to be exactly what I needed. She had me working a step every week. Every Saturday, we'd go to a meeting and we'd do step work. Every Saturday, we'd do step work. She told me what it was like to come in here. I come in here early, go to the bathroom, get your coffee, you sit down, you pay attention, and you keep your mouth shut, and you listen for a while. And she told me that, when it was done, if somebody said something that you like, you go and you talk to that person, and you go and you ask them their phone number. And so she really, she taught me about the program and about getting involved with the program. And still at this point, you know, I was doing whatever she said because, again, I had nowhere else to go, and I wanted to follow the rules as best as I could. And so that was. And after a while, I went to court to try to get visitation with my son, and they told me no. They told me that I was not fit. I had been in their court before. And just because I had a little 90 days sober did not give me the right to go in there and think that I could go see my son. So they denied my visitation. And, 90 days, I know it all. I'm good. I'm cured. You know, we get that 90-day cure. Don't they know how good I am now? And so I was, you know, it was a big disappointment. But my sponsor said to me, "Well, you got a choice. You can either stay and continue on the road you're doing, or you can go back out and go screw up. What are you going to do?" And it was cold out, and Jersey gets cold, and it was cold. I remember it was winter, and I was like, "I ain't going out there. I'm going to stay right where I'm at." You know, that was, and it, because, you know, it wasn't, I think for me, coming in here, I wasn't all about this, you know, I'm gung-ho sobriety. No. And I was very wary of people who were bullshit. You're full of shit. Screw you. You know. And that's because it's the life I lived. It made me be that way. So I wouldn't say anything to people like, this is where I want to be. Even though I was feeling better, I didn't say it because if I went back out, you'd know I was a liar. And even though I was a liar, but then you'd really know I was a liar for saying that. And I didn't want to be one of those people, you know? So I stayed. And what happened is that I stayed at that halfway house. And they kicked me out because I had an attitude problem. They said at 6 months, they said, you got an attitude, you got to go. And I, you know, and still to this day, I think, of course. I mean, you know, you've been drinking for 20 years. Of course you're going to have an attitude problem. Even if you didn't, you still got an attitude problem. They kicked me out, and my sponsor, I had nowhere to go, and my sponsor said to me, come to my house, you can come stay with me. And nobody ever did that to me before, because I would rob you, and let me in your house. If I could get your stuff, I'm robbing you. I'm taking your money, I'm taking whatever I can do. So this was new for me. She took me in her house, and her and her husband were going to Florida. And she said to me, feed the cat, go to a meeting, we'll see you in 3 days. I was like, oh, whoa. I got really excited. You know, I thought, oh my gosh, I could clean her out. Because, you know, I wasn't, even though I had 6 months, I wasn't all there. I wasn't all, you know, all honest and all this, you know, AA stuff. It wasn't. I also had a lot of thinking, of old thinking that I had to get rid of. But something happened. She trusted me. Nobody ever trusted me before. Even when I was a little kid, you know, my parents, it was bad, and my parents would, like, lock us out of the house when we were 5 years old. What the hell is that shit? But so this woman trusted me. She's like, here, feed my cat, and you gotta stay in the house. I was like, whoa. I had to honor that. I felt so good that somebody actually said that. So I stayed there, and I did what she told me to do. And I had to get a job, and my first job ever was at McDonald's. And I worked my ass off for 60 hours a week, $200 a week. I broke my ass. But what that also taught me was, it taught me responsibility. It taught me the importance of showing up. And it also taught me that I could have money in my pocket from Friday to Friday. That never happened to me before. Whenever I got money, I spent it. Spent it to whoever it was, whoever had the stuff that I wanted, I went and spent it. So I got that, you know, that little job, and things were happening in my life. These little, like, light bulbs and stuff were happening. And the other thing I noticed is that the sheriff wasn't coming to look for me. I had no warrants. Nobody was coming to lock me up, you know? So it was really, things started getting better. Things started happening for me. And so I wound up getting into this other program up there that reunited mothers with their children. And they helped me get my son. And my son, Nicholas, was 3 years old. And we went back to court, and I had about a year sober at this time, but from the time that they denied me that visitation to that time, I went and I got parenting classes, and during that time, I really built a good network of people in my network, and you know, I couldn't see it at the time. You know, when we're in stuff, we can't really see it. But that judge did me a good favor because I got my shit together, man. I got people in my life who were parents, and I went to these parenting classes, and I went every week, and I listened to this woman. This woman had eight kids. I was like, oh my God! But she taught me, you know, about having children, and the children are going to say things, and about how to discipline, because my thought of discipline was beating the shit out of your kid. That's what happened to me. And I knew enough that that's not what I wanted to do. I knew enough that if I do exact opposite of what my parents did, my kid's going to be okay. And so I did. So at a year sober, I got custody of my son back. And I'm gonna back up a minute. I started getting visitation. And I quit McDonald's because, you know, that job sucks, let me tell you. And I got a big respect for anybody who's working there, don't get me wrong. And I know how hard they work, but that job sucks. So I took a chance because, you know, my sponsor, we're doing a lot of work, and I got this job in this little engineering office. And so things were getting better, but they were a small office, they were engineers, and they knew nothing about alcoholics or addicts. They knew nothing. And they would give me the credit card, and they would give me money and say, go pick up stuff and whatever. And, you know, and it was just like, wow, this stuff was happening for me. And one day we had a we had a picnic that was happening on Sunday, and I didn't have a car, and they gave me one of the company cars, and they gave me money, they gave me the credit card, and they said, they knew that I didn't have my son, they didn't know my story, but they knew that I was just having visitation with him, and they said, well, go get your son and come to the picnic, we'll see you Sunday. And this was Friday, and I had this money, and I had to go down the shore in New Jersey to go get my son. And you know, I'm riding on the parkway, and boom, I wanted to get high. And it was so strong, and I'm sitting there, and you know, we didn't have cell phones at that time, and have those cell phones, and I'm on the parkway, and I had like $500 cash, and I had this car, and I had a credit card, and I thought, I could get through this, I could sell the car, I could get it all, I could get really good and bomb before they find out I'm missing. And then I remember somebody saying to me that the only thing between you and a drink one day is going to be God. And I said, okay, let's test this out. And I started praying. God, I'm going to fuck up. You better do something because I'm going to screw up here really bad. And I knew it. And I was really upset because, you know, I wanted to see my son. I was doing the right thing. But God, my mouth was watering. I wanted it so bad. Well, what do you know? On the left side, here comes this old Partridge Family station wagon with the back filled with AA bumper stickers. You know, and it was like live and let live, you know, and AA works. I mean, it was beat up, but the guy had the whole back covered, and I was like, oh my God, it worked, oh my God. And I pulled off, and I was able to get to where my son was at and call my sponsor. But it worked for me. And so that was my white light. I don't know. You know, it was. It was this Partridge Family, you know, station wagon. And this guy happened to be passing. And it was just what I needed just to get off, to be able to call my sponsor, to pick up the phone and call somebody and have her talk me through getting back up to the park and get back to where I was so that I didn't screw my life up. And so I got through that. And I wound up getting custody of my son back, and then I got kicked out of that program because I had an attitude problem, and they kicked me out, and I found myself with my son, and I had nowhere to go. And again, somebody in AA stepped up and said, "Come on, come to my house so you can get yourself together." And AA, I think at that time, the people in AA have become my family, they become my saviors, they have taught me. That no matter what you do, no matter what you've been through, you can change. You can change. You can get your life together. It can be beyond anything you ever imagined. And I was starting to see these promises and these things happening for me. So I went and I stayed at this woman's house, and I went and stayed with her for a little bit. And then I was able to, I saved money. And all this time, I got my son back. And I brought my son. My son came to meetings with me. And he was 4 years old, and when we started, he's like 3-4 years old, and I'd bring him. He'd come with me because I had to come here. I had to stay sober. If I didn't come here, I knew I was going to go use, and I didn't want that. I had enough good things happening in my life and promises happening that this stuff was pretty good what you guys had, and I liked it. And so I did. I raised my son. We raised my son, and I say we because people in AA helped me raise my son. I had no clue, absolutely no clue how to do this. But I'd get him. He had his little meeting bag with all his little meeting toys, and he'd come walking in, and he'd go in the back, and he'd have his cookie, whatever, and he'd go in the back, and he'd stay in the back, and as soon as the Our Father was ready, he'd come running out when we were done. But my son grew up in the rooms, and I was never ashamed about that. And yes, he went to his preschool and told the preschool people, "Mom goes to meetings." And, you know, and he told the teachers that quite a few times, but my attitude about it was, it's better to have a mother in recovery than a mother who's out there. So let them think whatever they need to think. But I know what I'm doing tonight. That was my attitude about it. And so I did. So we raised my son. And his father was not involved. He just chose not to be involved with it. And that was okay. Because what also happened for me is that... things started happening, and I wound up getting this job in corporate America. and they were a big company. They were like on the Fortune 500, and here I am walking in there. If they only knew. I'm like, God, these people have no friggin' clue, you know? But it was like, wow, you know what I mean? Like, from where I was to where I am. And I was, what a gift that was to be able to, my life got together. I got my life together. I had my kid. Had an apartment. I was going to this job that was paying me stupid money to do absolutely nothing, and it was feeling really good. It was good, and so I kept working. I started working with other women. I came to the meeting, and I was taught that, you know, you don't say no to AA. If you could avoid it, you take commitments. So I sponsor women. I pick people up. I'd always pick women up to go see their kids, you know, and I was just big on that, especially with the mothers, because I knew what it was like to lose a kid, even the fathers. So, but my sponsor ended up being, she was like, you know, you stay away from the men. Some are sicker than others. You need to stay over here. And she was right. I needed some, you know, I needed to stay there. But I did. But it was what was given to me. It got into my head very quickly that I needed to give it away if I was going to keep it. I had to. Couldn't keep it all. It wasn't going to stay that way. It wasn't going to happen. So life went on. I went to college. I got a college degree. I did college nights after work and during the weekends, and I did all that. And started moving up in that company. Got good manager position. And I say that, and I also say that for anybody who's got any kind of record. I've been to prison 4 times. Got quite a few felonies on my record, but I did it, and it could be done. And don't doubt yourself. You know, don't think that, you know, anything's gonna, you did in your past, it's gonna hold you back today. Because if you want to change, you want to make a change, you want to do something different, it's gonna happen for you. It's just, you're gonna have to work your ass off. That's all that's to it. You gotta work, and you gotta prove to people who you are today. And so I went to college, and I moved up in this company, and you know, I became a parent. I became a band mom. You know, the kid, my son was in band and all this shit. And you know, I was all, you know, Miss PTA and all that. And it was just blowing my mind. And I started attracting to my life good men, men that did not want to be me, men that had good jobs, they had responsibility, they took care of their kids if they had a child, they took care of me, they were respectful of my child, they were respectful of everything. Now I don't get into my story with other people because I don't think that's not who I am today. I'm not that person that was there 18 years ago of what I was. That is not who I am today. I know that's who I become when I drink and I drug, but that's not who I am today. So I attracted some really good men in my life, and this is, you know, but this is where I know, like, even in the book, and I say that, you know, there's AA gave me a lot, but there was times I needed to go outside and get other help, because there was stuff I had to deal with and things that I needed to put into perspective so that I could have good relationships, because I was attracting good people, but I was an angry woman. And there were things that, you know, I had to work out, because I started seeing where some relationships, you know, things were happening, and I went and I got that help. So I'm a big believer in there's something you need to deal with, and you can't get it from here. Go get it. Go take care of yourself, because you know that thing about enjoying life. We didn't come here to be miserable. We're not sitting here. Don't sit here and be miserable and depressed. You know, bullshit to that. You know, go take care of yourself. You got this far. Go take care of yourself. So I went. I did a lot of that and all that, and life got really good. And then what happened is, I started slowing down on my meetings. I started slowing down, and I was up to about 16 years sobriety, and I'd go into the meetings I always went to, and I knew what you were going to say. I knew what you were going to say, and I was pissed off that you were going to say it, because I was so bored, and I had this attitude, and you know, I have to watch, because I still have an attitude. I got to watch my attitude. You know, I get, I am one, I'm an isolator, and I've got to watch myself. I've learned a lot of things because I relapsed, and I learned some things from this, but I started getting an attitude, and then I started thinking, I got meetings in the bank. I got 16 years, I got meetings in the bank. I don't need to go to a meeting. And it was okay. And I was okay for a long time. And you know, I was still working, and my son, raising my son, everything's going good. And then I was traveling. I did a lot of traveling. And I went to Germany. And I went out one night. We're out, and the tour guide said, come with me. I'm going to show you where they have smoked beer. And I thought of barbecue. And I was like, oh, it must be barbecue. I didn't drink that night. But that was all I needed. It was that little thing that got into my head. And I never shared that with anybody. And that was my mistake. Because I hadn't been going to meetings. I hadn't had a connection with my higher power. And I know I didn't really get onto that higher power thing. But you know, when I sit here and I look back on my life and I look back on things that happened, God's been looking out for me for a long, long time. I have absolute no doubt for myself. There's something looking out for me. But I didn't say nothing to nobody. I never said, and I was traveling with somebody in AA, and I didn't go back and say to her, look, this is what happened. So 2 weeks later, I was back at work, and I'm in my office, and the thought came in my head, how about a taste? I said, okay. I got my purse, I went out, went to the bank, took $500 out of the bank, went down to the drug area to where I knew, got some liquor, went, and I relapsed. And I sat out there for 2 years. And in this time, you know, a lot of people in AA and people, come on, you know, get back in here. I didn't want anything to do with it because I didn't have any consequence yet. I took off time off of work and I tried to go to these programs, but I wasn't connecting. I wasn't connecting to it. It wasn't what I wanted. And what had to happen for me is that I had to lose everything. I got fired from that good job I had. My son left, and my son was now 20 years old, and you know, I raised him sober. Like I said, I was sober his whole life. He never saw his mother drunk, but he saw his mother turn into quite a mess. And I lost my house. I lost everything. And I had gotten so bad, back to that point where I couldn't pick up the cat shit off of the floor because the litter box was so full. She had nowhere to go to the bathroom, but I couldn't get it together to clean out a friggin' litter box. I was right back to that spot. Right back to that spot. I was like, how the hell? And so one day I have family down here. I have an uncle and a couple cousins, and I hadn't talked to them in 20 years. And something came in my head that, you know what, you need to reach out to somebody because you're either going to die or you're going to prison. Die and you go to prison. That's it. Or you can make a call and go to Georgia and see if your family will take you in. Because I was getting kicked out of my house. My son hadn't spoken to me. Things were bad. And I made a call to my cousin, and my cousin let me come down here. And so I came down here. And I came down here a year ago, April. And I came in here, and I came in here with a lot of shame. A lot of shame. I couldn't pick my head up. Because, you know, I had 16 years. I knew everything that everybody was saying. I had all this time. And I was just like, shit, for what? You know what I mean? For what? And what I lost. And so I'm here to say that it has not been easy. When I first came in all those years ago, sobriety was easy. I'm going to tell you, it was easy because I just had that, either that willingness or whatever was there. It was easy. I kind of slid through AA and all these prom things were happening and I felt good, right? You know, really quick. And it's not that way this time. And this time has been a fight. This time I've had to work my ass off. And I haven't gotten that relief that we get. I celebrated a year, October 4th. And I'll tell you what happened with that. I was here in April, and I was here 6 months, and I had some charges because, of course, I'm a criminal when I use. So within that time, I racked up some charges up in New Jersey, and I had to sell my house, and I had to get some things in order. And I went back to New Jersey, and I went back there a day, and I was driving down, and I shouldn't have gone. And someone to me said, don't go. You don't really belong there. And I picked up the phone, and I was talking to my sponsor, and it's like, you know, I got to go to court. They're going to have warrants and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, I can go. It's just, I'm going to be able to go. I neglected to realize how much power a place has in somebody. I neglected to know that I ignored the thought and the feeling that that when I got into New Jersey and I got on certain roads, my car, I was going. And I made the mistake of going to see my son. You know, I love that kid. And I hurt him bad. I hurt him really bad. And I had no business going to see him. And I thought I was okay. You know, I'd been coming to meetings and sponsor and all that. I thought I was okay. But I was not okay to hear what he had to say to me. And I chose to go use. And I went and I got high for 5 hours. 5 hours I went and got high. And something said to me, you better get in your car and you better get your ass out of here now or you're not going to go back and you can forget it. And so I did. And I just got in my car. I left the house. I skipped on court. I skipped on all that. And I came back here to Georgia to you people because this is where I was safe at. And I came back. And I came back. And so I've been here a year now. And like I said, things are getting better. I got a good job in Atlanta, and I'm feeling better. I'm working with Denise, and I'm coming to meetings, and I see a lot of you guys here, and I come to meetings, and I'm doing it. I'm doing the steps, and I'm doing what I know how to do. But I'm not 100%. This has been a fight. And, you know, some days I'm 51%. But I guess as long as I got that 1%, I'm okay. And as long as I can keep it that way. And I know it's going to get better. So I guess my thought really on that is that, we were talking, it's so easier to stay. It's so true. I did the research. It sucks going out and getting back here, folks. I'm telling you. It freaking sucks. And the price that we pay, and I guess too, what messed with me was that when I first picked up, I didn't have the big consequences. The ceiling didn't come crashing down on me. I went to work. Things didn't happen right away. So it messed with my mind. Even though I had all that AA in my head, and I had the drugs in my system, but it was like, yeah, but you know what? You're not in jail yet. and it was this, and it messed with me. And then all of a sudden, boom, it came crashing down. And I was like, holy shit, this really happens. So here I am. And that's pretty much my story. I still have not spoken to my son. And that breaks my heart every day. But I learned a lesson with that I'm not ready. I'm not ready to, because I hurt him bad. He's hurt. And I need to let him have his time. And so I come here, and I, like I said, I get involved with Denise and other people. And I'm really working on that spiritual part, because I really believe that the spiritual part is a huge part. And part of when I relapsed, I started neglecting that. I shared a couple nights ago that, I got into that habit of rolling off the bed right onto my knees and saying whatever. Rolling back, doing that. That was just a routine. I wasn't saying, I wasn't having a relationship. I wasn't being sincere. It was just like, well, this is just what I know to do. But there was no substance in it, And I know today I need to have substance in that spiritual part. I've got to have substance in my higher power and have faith in that and believe in that, because I think it's a huge part of this. It's a huge part of this, because people in the rooms can't keep you sober. And I'm gonna say one more thing. Sometimes I think that we're afraid to say something to somebody. And I just want to say that if you see somebody fucking up, call them on their shit. And I'm gonna say this because, and I take full responsibility for my program, my relapse, my job. But I know today I will call you on it. Where you been? Where the hell you been? What do you mean you're not coming to meetings? You're busy. You're not too busy to come to a meeting. You're not too busy to bring your ass here and talk to somebody and tell somebody what you have. I don't care what you got going on. It's an hour. And take it from me, it's easy to get into that mindset and you think you're okay, but you're not. So I don't think we need to be afraid to say something to somebody and call people on their shit. Who cares if they don't talk to you no more? Who cares about it? But for real. But at least, we have a responsibility. I have a responsibility here at AA. I've got a responsibility here to help you guys out, stay sober however I can. And if it means sometimes saying stuff that we don't want to hear, well, that's what we have to do. It's just reality, because it sucks, folks. It really sucks out there. And it's not worth losing your life. And losing what I lost, losing your family and shit. So just kind of keep that in mind. We don't have to be afraid of that. But anyway, that's it. I'm done.